Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. I am Yada. We have Kirk, James, and Larry here. We have a very hippie James, though I understand you have fallen again, JB.
Yeah, I managed to walk right off the edge of my foot came down and missed the porch and went straight to the ground while my bad leg caught all of my weight.
God.
That's a nice spine problem for at least a week right there.
Yeah, mainly the ankle. I sprained the ankle pretty bad. I got some swelling around the brakes, but thankfully the x-ray showed everything looks good. So no issues there.
Gosh. Wow. Okay, well, Kirk,
I'm going to get you one. I'm thinking maybe we can pitch in. What do you guys think? You know, get him one of those things where, you know, help, I'm falling. And
yeah, that's Lifeline, and then we'll get him a walker.
Lifeline, yeah, there it is.
Yes, I'm down, and I think
we need a walker. He may need a Rascal or a hover round.
We need a caddy.
Yeah, caddy. Yeah, keep me from getting myself any more injured.
Or a Sherpa. You know, a Sherpa to help him get around. Wow, that's gracious. As I understand it from Scott, Roy is going to be doing a program with Scott that is going to record on Sunday. I don't know if I'm part of it or not. I volunteered to help out, but Roy is a master of what he discusses from a scientific perspective, whether it is evolution or its dimensions or its light. So he and Scott, I'm sure, will do a great job. And I think they're scheduled to record that on Sunday. And then I think we'll have a program where Kirk, you're going to bring up, and Larry and I are going to interview you on the topics of American malfeasance, particularly as it has escalated from what's called the Spanish flu and World War I through the present day.
Well, the only trouble I have with that, you know, a lot of this is not my research. I've been reading the guy's stuff. I'm pretty sure because I know the other stuff in it is true. And he documents so terribly, terribly well. I just found it rather fascinating. I'm not sure. It's awfully horrible. You know, it's like talking about Paul or talking about Prophet of Doom. I mean, this stuff is that is presented is unbelievable malfeasance.
It's important.
I mean, I can present it. It's a bit of a downer. And the only thing that really kind of turned me off.
You think it's a downer?
Yeah. Here's my take on it. I think Larry is on the same page. Is that, well, we're no longer doing Shattering Myths, and I spent half the time in Shattering Myths exposing and condemning the U.S. and other countries nationally, economic interests, and militaries internationally. Politics and as a world organization of politics and also religion, we still need to do that because, you know, having gone through this Christmas, New Year's cycle, God, it's just, I tried to watch the Rose Parade this morning, and I was screaming at the television half the time. I mean, the damn thing ended with this chorus of God Bless America, followed by Jesus is the light of the world. And they had Jesus on the float.
Really?
And you just go, oh my God, this is just reprehensible. And then, you know, and it began the parade with the B-1 bomber or B-2 bomber, which is the stealth one that looks like a bat wing. And they're talking about how beautiful it was and how inspirational. This thing is designed to do two things, to rob America of their money, because they cost more than $500 million apiece to make and to destroy stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, they're designed to kill and to destroy for ungodly amounts of money. And people were saying, oh, isn't it beautiful? God, I wanted to puke. So, yeah, we need to tell that story because no one else will.
I do want to bring something up, though, about the political and the religious elite, because I'd like to thank them, okay, because I love the way the elite leave it up to the voters to determine whether or not they can rape the world. I mean, that's very kind of them, don't you?
It's very kind of them. Because, you know, in America, we have two political parties, bad and worse. And so they allow Americans to choose between bad and worse. I think that's really helpful. Because it makes America the land of the free.
Yeah, and it's a worldwide
choice between the choices they give us.
Yeah, you know, what's amazing, too, is that both choices want our military to be larger. They want Social Security to be larger. You know, I was reading about Medicare, which is the old FARC version where they
Medicaid.
Where they spend, you know, and Medicare, 80% of the cost is to prolong the last year of life for really old people.
Yeah, that's right.
Money that no individual in their right mind would spend on their own, but so long as other people are paying for it, why not rape the public to prolong a miserable year? But Medicaid is the one that is designed for those who can't pay for health care but want it nonetheless. They get an entitlement. In California, one out of every three Californians has Medicaid. One out of every three. And the cost is $70 billion. And they were celebrating how big a success that was.
Yeah.
$70 billion.
Steal from people and give it to somebody else. There's the Torah for you.
Yeah, well, wealth redistribution. Let's create a scheme that takes from people who are productive and besmirch them in the process while rewarding those who are unproductive. That is what a scheme. Let's celebrate the great success of doing that. Let's punish success and let's reward failure.
That always leads to a successful, thriving economy. Always.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful. And you know what's lovely about it is that of the money stolen from the productive, about 23 cents of it really gets to the intended recipients. So whoever's running the program is getting the money. I mean, let's face it. We all
know what's amazing, too, and I'm sure there's those who are listening to the program, even those who are participating in it, that may have a different view on this, but it is also amazing, like you see the movie The Big Short, and they're condemning banks. And while central banks are the epitome of evil, and they are conniving, and it is the ultimate smoke and mirrors. This is
the one time the Osho just lost it. He beat the hell out of them and threw them out of the temple.
Right. Yeah. The central banks are really evil. You know, the average bank, not so much. But they're certainly influenced by the central bank. But, you know, the movie called The Big Short, blaming the last resortion on bank greed. And, you know, it wasn't the banks. The last recession was created by the federal government. And it's because the federal government came up with a scheme whereby they would approve and encourage people to be able to buy houses with nothing down, with adjustable rate mortgages. And the combination of nothing down and adjustable rate mortgages meant that real estate was going to be grossly overvalued, that the loans would be worthless, that people could walk away from them, and that the whole system was guaranteed to fail. But the scheme was concocted by government interference. There is nothing in America that's more government-controlled than the home loan market, and yet none of these morons condemn the government. No, it's all about business. It's just
business. Are you claiming we're in a fabricated economy?
Totally. And the politicians are creating this economic warfare based upon business being the problem, when business is the only productive thing we've got in our country. And
One of our members in UT was just fined on his taxes $2,400 and some. He posted this, so his name's Daniel, so I'm going to say it publicly. He said that originally his health insurance for his family was like $350 a month, and they had it and everything. Well, when it went to Obamacare, his premium went to $1,400 a month, and it was unsustainable.
Right.
And so rather than pay for it, he gets a fine now.
that's the nature of Obamacare, is that you get fined for two things in Obamacare. First of all, the whole concept was, let's give health care for nothing to people who don't want to pay for it. And
right.
We'll do that by grossly overcharging people for it. And so the plans that we were self-sufficient in health care, and we have employees that we paid for their health care. Well, the premiums doubled and tripled, the deductibles quadrupled, and all of a sudden we had coverage that we had no interest in, that had all sorts of coverage for things that we have absolutely no interest in, but we had no choice. And if you don't accept it, you get fined. And if you try to get coverage that you'd actually prefer, you get fined.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're forced to pay 2 to 3 times more for a less desirable policy, all because the government wanted to give something away and to have it paid for by those who were responsible.
Well, back in the day, I used to teach the insurance course for Princeton University here in Florida. And I can tell you, the purpose of insurance is spreading over a possible financial loss too great to be absorbed by a single individual over a large group of people. I mean, that's what it's about. And if you take a large group of people and you say, okay, this half or this three quarters doesn't even have to pay, and this one quarter does, I got news for you. That quarter is paying.
The whole purpose of the concept.
Right.
The quarter that's paying is going to have to overpay, and they're going to under-receive. And there comes a time where there's no longer any incentive to do anything.
Oh, I think that the reason they set it up was
to invest. There's no incentive to do anything because of the government that punishes success and rewards failure. And we are in a politically correct culture where it is, for you to say that the movie The Big Short is based on a true story, and you can present that as truth because that's what's politically correct, when it has no basis in truth. This is a sad state of affairs that we live in. If you look at the Torah, the Torah actually has an economic plan.
Yeah.
Read it in Kara, Leviticus. The economic plan is presented in the proximity of the Yobel. That's something we talked about.
It's 50 years. It's 50 years. Yeah.
Right. And the reason that the economic plan is presented in the Torah is that, right at the beginning when he talked with Adam and what was going to happen outside of the garden, he was very clear, you're going to work. You're going to toil for your food. You're going to toil. You're going to work. And in the incentive to work, the consequence of working, is an incentive ingredient into human character. If you don't work, you rot.
Yeah, and he didn't set it up for monopolies either. I mean, that's why it was done on the 50-year cycle.
Right. Now, that is not to say that you should leave people who are destitute. We have a very good friend that for years was in a very difficult position, worked very hard, got cheated, and was in a very difficult position. But there was no time where our friend didn't want to work, didn't try to work, and our friend got back on his feet. But the fact of the matter is that Yahweh's plan is a plan that our friend would have loved to have participated in, which is that if you are fortunate enough that you do have a farm, leave the corners of that farm such that those who are hungry can harvest some food. Don't cook it for them. Don't give them money. Don't harvest it for them, but make it available to them. And then you have a central treasury where you have some wool, where you have some wood, so that those who are there can create clothing, so that they can build a fire, so they can build a shelter. But they're responsible for doing those things. And that's the system that he has, so that those who are down and out are given food. They're given access to meals and to clothing and to shelter and to warmth. But it's not provided for them. It's just that the ingredients to accomplish those things are made available, so long as they're engaged and willing to contribute.
Yeah, and that brings up a good point. I just want to throw this out here. You know, there's a lot of people that don't understand. You know, when I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink, and when I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. You know, being Yahweh's words. You know,
right.
They don't get that. And there's been a million cartoons out there, and of course, this is always left wing stuff. Not that I care what's left or right wing anymore, but it's always left wing. And they've got this depiction of Jesus, of course, he's really Yahusha, the Messiah, walking around like a bum with a cup in his hand. You know, and it is just the stupidest. I mean, he was a stonemason, as you aptly point out. You know, what part of that aren't they getting? He wasn't a bum living off others. As a matter of fact, they were helping to feed the poor Yehudim. So, you know, they couldn't have been bums on the street.
And, you know, and it is true that we're not equal. We're not equal in terms of ability. We're not equal in intellect. We're not equal in terms of motivation and discipline. We're not all equal. We're not all gifted with the same acumen. And so Yahweh recognized that if you simply allowed the accumulation of wealth, that would ultimately destroy opportunity. And so what he did is he came up with a plan that he emblazoned into his own plan, which was that every 50 years, all debts are forgiven. Now, it's really hard to build a banking empire if every 50 years, all debts are forgiven.
Yeah, certainly there is no more royalty, isn't there?
No, there are no more. There are no more banking families. There are no large banks because every 50 years, all debts are forgiven. Yahweh also said that usurious interest, not acceptable. Don't do it. But then he said also because land is the way that you know, the Roman Empire and also the lords of the Holy Roman Empire, that's the way they accumulated wealth. It was land holdings. It's not every 50 years. Land reverts back to me. And so you have all debts forgiven, and then the means of production, which at the time was either indentured servants or slaves, they were all freed. Yeah, labor. All freed. Every 50 years.
And by the way, that economic plan, doesn't that mirror the Torah and Sukkah? And
of course. Of course. Yeah, I was saying, this is the plan I'm going to implement. This is the best plan. I want you to implement this plan too. So it's his salvation plan is his economic plan. And so every 50 years, all debts are forgiven, all means of production, the labor force is all liberated and freed, all land is returned. And so, you know, when you're 15 to 20 years old and you're off beginning your own career, you can accumulate and make life as wonderful for yourself and your family as you are able over 50 years. But then everybody starts clean. New generation. You know, you get a chance to see what you can do. But you have all the
everybody got a shot, and that's as fair as it's ever going to get. That's as fair as it's ever going to get. And if somebody wanted to sit on their ass and do nothing, well, you know, they probably would end up with nothing, you know.
Right.
And
yeah, there's no welfare. There's no tax. There's no welfare. No tax, no welfare. And the treasury for those who are down on their luck or have, you know, orphans and widows and the like, the handicapped, we're going to provide food, we're going to provide, but you have to participate in cooking it, preparing those meals, going to prepare the warmth of a fire, but we're just providing the firewood and shelter, the wool for clothing, blacks for clothing.
You know, people today often confuse election rhetoric with reality, as you know. Mm-hmm. And I recall watching the floodwaters come into New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people, literally, that came out talking to the cameras, bitching, saying, get this, they didn't even bring us water.
Right.
So they literally thought that somehow there's this magic genie government guy that knocks on your door in the event of, you know, giant catastrophes, and he brings you breakfast in bed.
I mean, for here a week before Katrina hit New Orleans, they were told to leave. But
no, I'm not.
Their government's going to protect them. Their government's going to buy them a new house. Their government was going to provide them all the food. And what did they do as the waters rose? They became looters.
Right.
Because that's the character. That's the mentality. You know, my wife and I left Southern California at the time of the riots. And my wife was telling the story to some people while we were on a vacation not long ago. And she said, you know what ended the last set of riots in Los Angeles, where they were burning the city down, they were looting building after building?
I would think nothing shy of people with guns, but okay.
No, you know what? No, you know what ended the Los Angeles riots?
No.
Either
bribery?
A form of bribery. Back in the day, welfare was not sent electronically to one's bank account. Back in the day, you picked up your welfare check at the post office. They stopped rioting to pick up their welfare checks.
That makes sense.
That was it. End of the riots. The day that the welfare check showed up at the post office, they stopped rioting.
Now, that makes sense. That makes sense. I do recall, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but at the time there was a huge flood on the Mississippi River at that very time. And what they did was, you know, there were entire towns, like little towns like Niota, Illinois, and a bunch of them that I know of, where the area I grew up in, you know, were just flatly wiped out. I mean, they just didn't exist anymore. And, of course, there was a certain amount of aid given, again, in all this. But Maxine Waters finagled it in there at the time that in this flood bill for the Mississippi River, and, of course, this
was
is not
Los Angeles Congress.
This, yeah, $100 million to the areas affected by the riots for job creation. $100 million. I'll bet it didn't create 10 jobs. You want to bet?
Probably.
I'll bet you.
Probably. Well, it created some, you know, the latest form of welfare in America is working for the government, whether it's city, county, state, or federal. Or the
they're all on welfare. Sure.
Yeah, that is the newest form of welfare. Now, you actually have to, a certain number of hours every day, have to sit there like a blob. In fact, if you watch there's a trailer for a movie where a fox and I think it's a rabbit walk into the DMV, and it's a sloth, the DMV, and the sloths actually do process something, but it takes them all day to do a simple request. You know, that's government work. And so we have a new form of welfare. It's called working for the government. And the government now is about 30% of GDP. So it's not a small thing. It has essentially replaced welfare.
And that's insane on its face. That's insane.
It is. We are what we are, and it is. It's not fixable. This is not a situation that can be reversed. It can't be fixed. I was reading an article today in the newspaper, and it was talking about the fact that China was building a new aircraft carrier. The first one that China is building from scratch. The last one, they bought the hull from the Ukraine. And then they completed it. And the answer, according to U.S. military, was to since China was narrowing the gap. Now, we happen to own and deploy 13 battle groups, each with their own mega aircraft carrier, all of which are four or five times the size of the Chinese aircraft carriers. And the answer was that we had to, the gap was shrinking, so what we needed was to invest more in the U.S. military.
Because our Navy's light. Yeah, this is laughable, of course, you know. But that's always the answer, isn't it? More money. Yeah, the one that I used to hate was spend more money on education.
Yeah.
You know, you go out, you get
you
AIDS,
care for your right? children's future. You'll invest in education, yet, and if you look at the research, there's an indirect relationship between money and performance.
The school district
and the states that spend the most per student deliver the worst performance in terms of national testing.
Well, most of the money is going to administrative things, and you, in order to move up the ladder in administration, you have to come up with something new. So rather than continue on with a system that works, you write a new book or a new paper on how your new program, your new approach will work, and therefore that's how you move up. And, of course, it creates disasters to the teacher who now has to learn a new system, and when they figure out it doesn't work, they just don't know what to do.
Yeah, I think that's the part of that.
I
see that
every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did on television debate the head of the New York school system statewide.
Department of Education, yeah.
Sure did. And, you know, her premise at the time was more money, more money, more money. And I said, I beg to differ with you. I said, how much do you get per student? And this was back in the mid-90s, and it was like $8,500 per student. Of course, if you can tag them with, you know, DDHD or TDS or whatever the hell you want to tag them with, then you get twice the money or three times the money, which is why they all have a school psychiatrist now. But all I did is I said, now you're bitching that you have 30 people a classroom. Let's do the math. I said, now how much are you paying your teacher? You know, and I subtracted that out. And I said, now let's, you know, we spend $2,000 a year on books, which is never going to happen.
Right.
I said, now look at what we've got left over. I said, what's happening here is your administrative costs are way out of line. I said, because clearly I could take this classroom, give them all gold leaf books, put computers on their desks, pay the teacher twice as much, pay the janitor twice as much, and at the same time, I've still got hundreds of thousands left over. What are you doing wrong? She had never had anybody talk to her like that, you could tell.
It was amazing. It's the indoctrination of America, of the West, really, and political correctness, where there's no accountability, no responsibility, the exercise of good
poor math skills
is a crime. A lot of the political correctness evolves out of no math skills, because it is probability, which is the mother's milk of logic and reason, that probability is math-based. And because most people today don't know their multiplication and division tables and have never been taught the viability, the importance of probability and statistical analysis, never been taught rhetoric or logic or debate, they're incapable of exercising good judgment, and therefore those who run the schools who are the most indoctrinated with political correctness have no concept of accountability.
That brings us back to Torah. Yeah, I had a good friend of mine tonight tell me about a debate she had, and you know the God of the Torah wasn't a very loving God according to the people she was debating. He's everywhere. He loves everybody. When she pointed out, none of this is true.
No judgment.
The
God of religion is not judgmental. The God of religion is not accountable. The God of religion is not rational, does not exercise good judgment. The God of religion is like...
He loves everybody.
It's like the great God of political correctness. We've created a God in our own image. And sadly, that image is hugely distorted, perverted, inaccurate.
Yes, and it's also politically correct, isn't it?
Yeah, which means that it is absolutely incorrect.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I was listening to the Rose Parade, to get back to that, and they were belting out God Bless America, and you process what God had to say about human government. Don't give
what
he
had to say about America.
You should never have rulers over you. And then he goes in to explain specifically in denouncing kingdom as to why in the world you never want a government. And that in spite of all of this, we think that God is blessing America. How could you be that deceived? You know, read Isaiah 18.
You mean where he says, whoa?
Whoa! You're conceited. You're arrogant. You're murderous. You're duplicitous. You're power hungry. You're vicious. And oh, by the way, you're the worst country on earth as it relates to the place that I love the most.
Yeah, and doesn't he equate the USA to Babylon and Habakkuk 1? Doesn't he? Yeah. Wow.
Well, we're as close to, there's only two institutions, I think, in the world today that could be both equated to Rome, the Roman Catholic Church and its various children, Christianity, and the United States government.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We are the living embodiments of Imperial Rome that God said was the most vicious, most duplicitous, most overall horrendous beast that humankind had ever conceived.
You know, if you look at the well of the house, you know what's on each side of that, right there on the wall? The fasci. Fascism. It's right there. It's a scary situation, you know, and I'll look forward to that program, Kirk.
Yeah. So, and
well,
again,
my homework to see what I feel comfortable telling you all.
So we'll interview you, and Kirkler and I will provide the questions, and you'll provide the text.
All right. Well, I know Roy, by the way, wants you to be there. I was unsurprised. I thought Jake was who wrote the Rainbow paper was going to do it with him, but maybe he can't do it because of the hours or something. But
yeah, it was Jake that wrote the paper.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you said it correct. Yeah, okay. I wrongly attributed it to Jake.
Well, I just got it came through different emails and things. So.
Yeah. But anyway, the three down under contributors, Australia and New Zealand, could easily carry the show with Scott. I'm happy to help out and play narrator if they would like to. They certainly don't need me, but I'm happy to play narrator for no other reason than I enjoy listening to what they have to say.
Yeah.
So I get if I play narrator, I get a front row seat. And I've just let Scott, I put it in Scott's lap and say, you know, if you want me, I'm available Sunday, happy to do it. So that's the thought. Okay, then in a week from Sunday, Kirk will do the recording. Larry and I will interview you on America the Ugly.
Yeah, I'm going to put you under a microscope, so just be ready.
Okay.
So Yahweh said, I will maha. Obliterate and destroy, annihilate and exterminate, terminate the existence of, cleanse and remove the impurity of, the Adam man, whom relationally I have created, from the face of the ground, the Adamah, because the Adam man has preyed upon living creatures who move about, and winged creatures who fly in the sky. Indeed, because I am grieved, regretting having made them. This is something that I have long suspected, and I don't want to harbor this too much because I could be wrong. But I think when people kill because they like to kill, the American sniper, those in the military who that was the highest calling in their life, they think that America owes a debt of gratitude to the heroes who went off and sacrificed their lives for the country. Those who were trained to kill, and those who hunt for fun. Those who hunt for fun. I think God is disgusted by it. I think God loves life. I think He loves all forms of life. And I think God takes great pleasure in life. And when we wantonly, gleefully, unnecessarily destroy life, I think it is bothersome to Him. Now, I'm not talking about here being a vegan or a vegetarian. Yahweh clearly wants us to eat meat. You know, He wants us to eat lamb when we sit down and feast with Him. He wants us to eat beef on other occasions when we sit down and feast with Him. He realized that protein is good for us. And I don't think God, in fact, I know for certain that God's got no issue with us mercifully killing an animal for food. And for those who hunt for food, I don't have a problem with that. But I don't think God, you know, I was watch programs on TV where you have homes that are just filled with mounts, with the heads of animals that were shot for fun, for entertainment. I was watching a series of shows on television where they were showing the kind of events that took place in Rome where people watched others kill for fun. And God is saying here that one of the reasons, in fact, the stated reason here that he grieved in having created man and wanted to end man is that man became a killing machine. But look at the celebration America has with the B-2 bomber, that stealth bomber that flew over the Rose Parade. How beautiful that looks. It's created for one thing, to kill. Look at the number of times that America's military was honored in that parade. They're trained and equipped to kill.
And what does that tell you about future plans? They're going to widen wars. They want more people involved.
Right, that man is going to become even more grotesque in killing. And that the response to the killing of the Islamic State is to kill. That's our answer. Our answer to those who are killed by terrorist acts is to kill. We become fixated with killing. And we kill everything. And while I am an environmentalist in a sense, I really enjoy the great outdoors. I love nature. To me, I love nature, not in the sense, by the way, in one of these floats was Mother Nature. And this Mother Earth goddess with her arms outstretched, it made me want to puke. But, I mean, I enjoy nature in the sense that life, to me, and the beauty of life is an amazing part of what Yahweh has conceived for us. And I enjoy it. But, you know, those who
can I throw something in there real quick?
Go ahead.
I just don't get the whole damn crocodile thing. Sorry. That's the one guy. I mean, he's out there wiping out otherwise healthy animals. I don't get the whole crocodile thing. That's the beef I have with Yah, and I'll bring it up to him. But,
I don't rid the world of crocodiles.
I'd shoot every damn one of them. Get my hands on. I really would.
The only critter that I think is so ugly and so menacing looking that I don't mind it being killed are those snapping turtles. But the fact is that life is a struggle, and animals kill. God didn't get mad at animals because the crocodile kills the gazelle to eat. God got mad at man because he kills in wars. And he kills, and you know, you look at. I was in Hawaii, and on the Big Island, not too far from Kona, is a place where a witch doctor and a king united over the people, and they wiped out about half of the population of the Hawaiian Islands by killing everyone who wouldn't submit and capitulate. They pulled out the heart of living people. You got in Islam today. In the Islamic State, a fatwa that has been written by the religious experts on Islam, that it's okay to take out the parts of a living person to give to a Muslim. You know, we are just reprehensible.
I'm going to bring something else up about a fatwa, if I might. You know, there's a misnomer out there that somehow there's not homosexuality in Islam. I beg to differ. There are more homosexuals in Islam per capita than there are in Denmark, okay? I mean, or
even the Quran celebrates homosexuality.
There was a fatwa written. And Yalda read it to me. This was a Persian cleric, mullah. And he was talking about how to rape a man.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you know, in Islam, like for example, in Afghanistan, where Americans are witnessed Islam up close and personal. When we turn over a community to the Islamic warlords and the Islamic police and the Islamic military in Afghanistan,
come get the little boys.
They come get the little boys. They tie them to cheer. They call it bachi ba, boy play, and they sodomize them.
I know.
And they do it in by the tens of thousands of them. I was going to say one of the Quran depictions of paradise is of homosexual sex and the conquering of boy virgins, and how that in Allah's paradise there won't be any concern about homosexual activity.
Yeah, they have
all
big brown eyes.
You're looking at Christianity. Christianity is hugely anti-homosexual, and yet the founder of Christianity was a homosexual, Paul.
And so are the priests.
Yeah. And so
they got an army.
The priests of Roman Catholicism. Now listen, I don't really give a hoot. You know, so we're on a subject now that I don't care about. I don't care about homosexuality. That doesn't mean diddly squat to me. I don't like it promoted as normal, but I don't care what people do. You know, there are so many things more concerning to me than homosexuality. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, well, that's the political.
Guess what?
Yeah.
Did homosexuality make Yahweh's top 10 list?
Nope, sure didn't.
Sure didn't. But did adultery?
Oh, yeah.
Did killing?
Absolutely.
Did bearing false witness?
Oh, yeah.
Did ignoring the Shabbat?
Yep.
How about negating the importance of Yahweh's name?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
How about being religious? How about being religious?
That's in there. Sure.
Yeah.
Stealing?
Being a patriot.
All those things made Yahweh's top 10 list, but homosexuality didn't. So it is one of the things that is a smoke screen.
I just wanted to point this out because you get people running around claiming that somehow they kill homosexuals in Islam. Well, maybe they do because he didn't sleep with the right imam or mullah or whatever.
Everybody. Islam is a cult. They kill everybody.
Who do they not kill?
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying it's put out there like it's this big no-no. And I'm telling you, it is not a big no-no in Islam.
Do you think that mankind was more deadly at the time of Noah or today?
Probably today.
I can go.
Do you think?
I don't know how bad it was, but he said it was bad enough to destroy him, or not to save him. So it had to be awfully bad.
Well, what do you think? I think today
it was awfully bad, and that with their spears and their bows and arrows and with their swords, that they were deadly. How does that compare to a nuclear bomb? How does that compare to germ warfare? How does that compare to dropping bombs from airplanes? How does that compare to the kind of weapons that we have developed and deployed? How does that compare to even just an automatic rifle or a 50 caliber machine gun or the Gatling gun on the nose of an Apache helicopter? How does that compare? A cluster bomb.
Compare.
No. Doesn't even compare. So
you
God grieved of creating man and was going to destroy man because man had become deadly. Then what do you think that God thinks of us today?
Well, I'm sure he's just as beside himself now as he would have been then if he's looking at it.
What nation is the deadliest nation on the planet today?
The United States.
By far.
Not even close.
Right. So how can you sing a song, God Bless America?
But there's a who you call God. We know who they're calling God, though. It ain't Yahweh.
Yeah, the American God is nothing to do with the real God. Now, it says here, but Noah, the trustworthy guide to the resting place, Noah is an interesting word. It's from Nakah, which means to lead, to guide, and to direct, creating an opportunity for a more favorable state which is reliable and dependable and can be trusted. Now, do you think that the relationship between Noah and Nakah is arbitrary, or do you think by naming him Noah, telling us this is what this guy did, this is how this guy responded to my instructions, and this is what I did on his behalf, do you think that maybe that's related to lead, guide, and direct, create an opportunity for a more favorable state which is reliable and dependable and can be trusted?
So it'd be a trustworthy guide. Yeah, I think it's related to the name, absolutely. Yeah,
so
I don't
could
think
we,
yeah,
could we study the story of Noah and be led to a more favorable place?
Yes.
Could we rely on what Yahweh did based upon what Noah did?
Yes.
Isn't the essence of the Noah story that Yahweh provided Noah with a set of instructions as to how to respond to save his family, that Noah accepted those instructions, he acted upon them, and Yahweh delivered as promised?
Yes.
Is there anything more? Yes. I mean, if you were to say, to summarize the story, other than one thing, isn't that the entirety of the Noah story? That Yahweh provided
Noah listened to Yahweh's
instructions. Noah listened to what he had to say,
them?
Accepted what he had to say, and responded without changing an iota to what he had to say, and Yahweh delivered his promise. With one exception, is that not the entirety of the Noah story?
It is, and what's the exception?
I just read the exception. That those who kill for fun, those who celebrate killing, God will destroy.
Yeah, but that wasn't Noah. So
no,
yeah,
but that's okay. The other side of the story.
Yeah, sure.
You know, Yahweh doesn't.
When you take your
anything.
Kids to church on Sunday and you put up a Christmas tree, are you killing them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I would say Yahweh doesn't tell a story where there isn't choice and a consequence both ways. There's a consequence to listening to him and trusting what he has to say and acting upon his instruction. There is a consequence. It's very favorable. But there's a consequence of ignoring him, of rejecting him, of killing, of being deadly. There's a consequence both ways. And Yahweh, in the story of Noah, tells us the consequence both ways. If you choose not to listen to what Yahweh has to say, if you choose not to act upon what he has offered, you're going to cease to exist. If you trust what he has to say, if you act upon it, then you're going to find all the benefits that were afforded to Noah and his family.
And why is that hard?
Yeah. So Noah is based upon two words, Nakah, which means to lead, to guide, to direct, creating an opportunity for a more favorable state, which is reliable and dependable and can be trusted. And Nuach. Nuach is to provide a place for the spirit to settle down, to rest, to abide, and to remain. That's the more favorable place. He found Masa, discovered and obtained, came to possess and experienced favor, Ken. Fortuitous response, acceptance, mercy, compassion, fondness, and kindness. A special and beneficial relationship which made him pleasing and agreeable. In Jebus' eyes. In the Lord's eyes. No, it doesn't say that either. In Allah's eyes. No, it doesn't say that either. In Yahweh's eyes. Folks, there is no Jebus. Yeah, I know the Lutherans made that beautiful float, and they had Jesus standing there. There is no Jesus. Jesus is an absolute, total, and complete fabrication of human mythology based almost entirely on Dionysus. But there is a Yahweh. And he is the one that saw that Noah would listen. Noticed that Noah would listen. Now, there is something here that is profoundly important. And that is that we have no indication that Noah knew Yahweh. None. What we know is that Noah found favor in Yahweh's eyes, so, and it was based upon what we'll find in the next paragraph, was the way that he interacted with his own family. And so reached out to Noah. I think that's true for all of us. I don't think there's any of us who on our own came to figure it all out and say, okay, now that I have figured it all out, I'm going to walk away from all that religious and political and patriotic and military crap, and I'm going to drop it all, because I have figured out who you are and what you're offering, hereby I am accepting and responding. I don't think it happens that way for... No, it didn't happen that way for Abraham. It didn't happen that way for Moshe. Do you think there's more important people along the way than Moshe, Noah, and Abraham? Didn't happen that way to Yohanan or Shimon Kefesh either.
No, they were lived.
So what do you think the odds are that it happened that way to James and to Kirk and to Larry and to Craig? Does it say...
Not good. I mean, it didn't happen
Moshe,
that way
to me. Moshe, after he left Egypt, went and became a sheep herder and figured it all out, and then he went to Yahweh and said, hey, Yahweh, now that I understand who you are and what you're offering, let me go and with you and we'll go and free the chosen people. Is that what it says? Does it say that Yohanan and Shimon Kefesh were out fishing and they decided, I've looked at the calendar, I've read the Torah, it's the time the Messiah is going to arrive here, let's go find him. And let's encourage him to accept us. Does it say that?
No.
Does it have anywhere in this text that Noah came to Yahweh and said, hey, Yahweh, I think it's going to rain. I think that humankind is really despicable. Yeah, I think it's time to build a boat. Got any ideas?
Well, no, I mean, what you're saying here is a profound thought, really. It is a profound thought.
Sure.
Yeah, it reemphasizes something that collectively we've come to understand. It's just that it's never been quite in our face the way it is right at this moment.
That's true.
Every one of us benefits from the fact that Yahweh reached out and introduced himself to us before we knew who he was, is, nor what he was offering.
Absolutely true. Mm-hmm. Absolutely
true. It's the same thing for everybody else that we find along the way.
I find it interesting.
We generally have nothing to brag about, which is important, but it's also important that we realize that there's a reason that Yahweh reached out to Moshe. There's a reason that he reached out to Dod. There's a reason he reached out to Shimon Kefesh and to Yohanan and to Noah and to Abraham, to Moshe, to Kirk, to Larry, to Craig, to James. There's a reason that he reached out to each of us. And that reason, I think, is twofold. One is because he knows how we're going to respond. He knew in advance those that he could introduce himself to that were willing to walk away from all the things that he is disgusted by. And they were willing to invest the time to get to know him. And that would eventually do as Noah did, respond and act upon what he was offering. And number two,
I just want to interject something there. This is how it happened with me. I asked him his name, and this is going to be very bizarre. I never listened to Christian radio stations, couldn't stand them. And I was flipping through one, and guess who was on?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That was it. That next day, I hadn't listened to a Christian. I don't listen to them. Never have. And it got real interesting. And, Craig, what you started saying was, church steeples, they're the first thing to kiss the sun and the last thing to kiss the sun. And this is based on sun worship, and that's based on sun worship. And I said, well, hell, it's easy to sit around and knock Islam. It's an easy thing to do.
Right.
But, you got to sit down and you got to face your own demons here, too.
Right.
You got to say, well, we've all been had. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, and, true.
Are you willing to
go where the words lead? And if you do, you can't just condemn Islam. You got to condemn Christianity right along with it. And every aspect of Christianity is rotten to the core. And, oh, by the way, God really does have a name. Only one name. And I didn't ask God, hey, God, what's your name? I wasn't given a unique epiphany. I wasn't given a revelation where Yahweh said, "This is my name. Tell people." You know, I figured out Yahweh's name
by reading his words on his stand.
Exactly. That is it. Nothing more to it than that. I simply observed. And by observing, you know, it's more than reading. Because if you were to read the translations that exist today, I'm not sure you'd figure it out.
Oh,
and that's why Yahweh doesn't tell us that, you know, what we need to do, folks, is to read his word. If he wanted to, he would have just, you know, kara is the Hebrew word for read. And he could have said, you know, I want you to kara Torah. He doesn't say ever once kara Torah. He says shamar Torah.
Yeah, observe it.
And so reading wasn't enough.
Be thoughtful.
Closely examine and carefully consider. And there it was, staring me in the face. And, you know, originally I just went to, well, the four letters that are there, every place it says Lord, are YHWH. And I made a mistake. I made a lot of them. I assumed that YHWH at the people who knew that it was YHWH and that were far more schooled in Hebrew than I knew it was Yahweh and that it must be Yahweh. But there's a problem with that. They all said that Hebrew didn't have any vowels. And yet the Torah that I was reading said that these people spoke Yahweh's name. If it doesn't have any vowels, they couldn't have spoken it. And it says, read and recite the Torah, share the Torah with your children. Communicate the Torah with your children so that they know it. And you couldn't do that if it didn't have any vowels. And all I had to do was open my mind and open my eyes and to realize that the diacritical marks aren't necessary. That there's five vowels in amongst the 22 letters in the Hebrew language, and that you look at the words which comprise those vowels, and yeah, it was extraordinarily clear as to how to pronounce them. The Y is the O in Torah, it's the O in Shalom, it's the O in Goyim, the O in Or for light, and the He is the Haya that he says is the basis of his name. And the Yod was never under any question. It's pronounced the same way as the Y is pronounced in English today and in virtually every language. And all you have to do is look at all the words in the Hebrew lexicon and you realize that it's not Yahweh, it's Yahweh.
Well, it takes a little time, a little effort.
Let me share with y'all something really cool that Frank sent me. He sent me a tape of this expert from the University of Jerusalem, or maybe it's the University of Israel in Jerusalem, but he spent his whole life studying Akkadian languages of Babylon, and there's hundreds of thousands of documents, and when the people from Jerusalem were carried off into Babylon, you know how they pronounce God's name?
Yahweh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know that it was in
Babylon. When they came out, they called him Yahweh, I guess, or they called him nothing.
No.
I don't know.
When they went into Babylon, they all referred to Yahweh's name correctly. Yahweh. I mean, it's obvious. It's one of the easiest things to figure out. And it's so overwhelmingly affirmed as you explore the Hebrew lexicon that the Yod Heh Wah Heh is Yahweh. And the Torah is, of course, the fixture. It's the upright pole in the pronunciation of his name. It provides the proper pronunciation of the two letters that there could be any question on, the Wah and the Hey, because the Yod is never been questioned. And so Torah, which is the second most repeated word in the Hebrew lexicon. The only one that's anywhere close to Torah is Shalom, where the law again is provided. It's clear. What happened, though, in Babylon because what is Babel? What is beyond being with Baal and being the basis of the English Bible? Yeah, what does Babel mean?
Confusion.
Okay. So when the Yahudim went to Babel, the religious leaders amongst the Yahudim and the Yehudim in general were called Yahoos.
Mm-hmm.
The name of the internet search engine Yahoo.
It was a slight.
It's a slight on these people who are named after their gods. We want to slight the god and the people. And the religious leaders, because they didn't like the slight, made it illegal, punishable by death, to say Yahweh's name. Now, their response was an absolute and direct refutation of the third statement that Yahweh etched in stone, where he says, I will not forgive anyone who negates my name. Now, well, the Shav, the Shoah, really, and the Nassau in the third statement can be expounded upon to say that I will never forgive anyone who advances lifelessness and deceit in my name. If you read it just at face value and you don't do any amplification, it says, I will not forgive anyone who negates the merit of my name. Yeah. And so they were in direct contradiction to the third statement that Yahweh etched in stone. And so they came out with a program where the very basis of the third statement, is based upon Shoah. That's the opposite.
Which means deceitful death.
Right.
Okay.
It means to corrupt, to counterfeit, to deceive. And so anyone who NASA lifts up, advances, tolerates, accepts that which lifts up and accepts lifelessness in my name. And they took Shoah and they came up with the Shoah system where the four letters in Yahweh's name were the principal targets of a linguistic system that would change their pronunciation. So the Yah became Yeh. And the Wah became a V sound. And they went about the process of specifically, deliberately, purposefully creating a linguistic system for the express purpose of rendering Yahweh's name unpronounceable. And that was the Shoah system. The very verb that is the first statement that Yahweh etched in stone to say, I will never forgive that. That's why, by the way, when Yahweh says that he will reaffirm his covenant with Yisrael and with Yehudim, you know that every related statement, including the one in Jeremiah 33, and the ones in Zechariah and Malachi that speak of that day, every single one of them emphasizes the reality that they will affirm that Yahweh is their God.
Yeah, they'll use his name, literally.
They use his name. And it is Yahweh's not forgiving those who negate his name. It is only when they stop doing that that he will accept them. So this is an important statement, that it is Noah, the trustworthy God, the trustworthy guide to the resting place, to a more favorable state, which is dependable and trustworthy, that he found favor in Yahweh's eyes. Now, it goes on to say here that this is the genealogical record of Noah, the trustworthy guide, who was Haya, who existed as what?
Yeah.
A groveling worm that bowed religiously in God's presence. There was a God-fearing man. That's why he found favor.
He was upright.
On his knees, right?
Oh, wait a minute. The word that God said is Tzedak? Wait a minute. Tzedak is the opposite of bowed down. You know, there was a... Oh, I know what it was. Cruz is the guy that's gaining, you know, momentum in the presidential race. His father is a fundamentalist Christian wacko. He's written a series of books that says that no one can be president of the United States unless they spend every morning on their knees, bowing down in prayer to God.
Wow.
He called, by the way, the U.S. Constitution a divinely inspired document.
Really?
You know, oh, yeah. That's, I tell you what, the cast of characters that the Republicans are running for president are as bad as the cast of characters the Democrats are running. Anyway, the fact of the matter is, this guy found favor in Yahweh's eyes because he was the antithesis of politically correct. He was right. Sadak. He was the antithesis of religious. He was on his feet, standing upright, not bowed down. That's the verb. That's the concept that Yahweh deployed here to tell us that the reason that Noah found favor is he wasn't bowed down and he wasn't politically correct. He was right. And he was upright. God doesn't want humankind to grovel. God's not so insecure he wants you to worship him. He was right. Sadak.
He seems to be standing up the word with the letter.
Yeah.
There's a A at the end, Sadak.
Sadak is the T-S, signpost along the way. The D, a Y, and a Q.
And then there's a very
signpost along the way.
There's something has a A in it at the end, too. Let me go. I'll find it. Don't worry.
Yeah, but Sadak, you know, the Q is the rising light on the horizon, speaking of the light and of an eternity enveloped in the light. The Y is Yahweh's hand.
Oh, now that's straightness. When you add the hay, it's the straightness for righteousness.
The left is the foot.
Then I put a hay there. That, yeah, that's a variation on it.
Walking
okay.
Along the signs to Yahweh's name, where you'll find his outraged hand that leads you to light eternal. Sadak. I mean, right. And blameless, tamim, unimpaired, individual. Where? It was. Does it say that Noah was perfect, end of sentence?
No.
No. He was blameless and unimpaired where? In what context?
In his home. In his home.
Oh. In his home.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I blew right by that before.
Yeah. You know, it's it doesn't say that he was perfect. Period, end of sentence, does it? Says he was unimpaired in his home. Now, to be unimpaired in your home, loved his wife, supported his children, did his job as a husband and father. That's what it means. He was responsible. He was upright and blameless in his home. What is, when Yahweh tells us to walk to him to become perfect, you've walked to him to become perfect, haven't you, Larry? Are you flawless?
From his point of view, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're perfect where? In the context of his covenant.
In the context of his home. Yes.
Right. In the context of his home, you're perfect. Out of the context of his home, are you perfect?
Not a chance. I don't tell anybody to emulate me at all. Right. Not
okay. Was Dode perfect out of the context of the covenant?
No.
No. None of us are. But in the context of the family home, hey, we're all perfect.
I've said to people, you know, Yahweh talks about being like the ant. You know, trying to compare our personal lives with, from his perspective, it's got to be like us trying to compare ants, almost. And it's being reliant on his plan and him for to be amplified into the next dimension, and that's the way I like to put it. I don't like salvation as such a nothing name.
Yeah, I agree. The interesting thing about salvation is a byproduct of walking with and to. Yeah.
relation.
Our salvation is a byproduct of walking into and with Yahweh. The direct benefit of walking to and with Yahweh's relationship, being part of his family. That's the direct benefit. The indirect benefit, the ultimate, I wouldn't even say ultimate, one of the derivative benefits is salvation. But the immediate benefit of doing what Noah did, which is he walked halak with Yahweh. He was an upright individual, the H, who followed the lead of the shepherd, the Lamech, with the K, the open palm of the hand. He walked with Yahweh. Didn't say he groveled at Yahweh's feet. He didn't say he bowed down to Yahweh. Didn't say that he ran with Yahweh. Didn't say he flew with Yahweh. Said he walked with Yahweh.
He didn't even say he joined any religion either, did it? I think that's one of the things that endeared Yahweh to Noah, is that he wasn't involved in the spiritualism and all the nonsense that was going on at that time.
He didn't say he walked with the priest, did it?
No.
He didn't say he walked with the mighty and powerful people on earth, did it? Didn't say he walked with the military. Did he walk with the elitists?
He was a great patriot.
He walked with God.
Is there any story?
We'll go on and tell us that there is one way that you can walk with him. The Moed Mikre. That's how you walk with him.
That's important. I mean, we have to respond. Dode had to respond, right?
Yes. So,
respond.
Very interesting series of things that he said that made Noah special. He was right. He was upright. He was flawless in his home, his family, and he walked with God as opposed to man.
And every story is about the same way, isn't it?
Yes.
All the major stories, he finds someone who's willing to listen, has the right perspective, open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
He introduces himself, and they walk on a journey together.
Yeah, what's the first thing that Yahweh asks of Abraham? Walk away from Babel and walk with me.
Right.
To the land that I have promised. Walk. What's the first thing he says to Noah? I mean, to Moshe?
Walk with me.
Walk with
me.
We're
on a journey together. We have a place to go and things to do together. And
that's right. Exactly.
Right down to the disciples.
Yep. Walk with me.
Follow me. Mm-hmm. Walk with me.
Now it says Noah had fathered three sons named Shem, Ham, and Yefet. One of the things that has always been troubling to me is that it is believed that being anti-Semitic is being opposed to Shem, and that that would be to be the Jews and the Arabs are descendants of Shem. That's not what it means.
No, it's being anti-Yahweh's name. That would be anti-Semitic.
That is exactly what it means. It means being opposed to the name. I don't think there's one person in a million that understands that.
Mm-hmm.
But the primary use of Shem in the Hebrew language
name.
Is name. And so being anti-Shem is to be opposed to Yahweh's name. Now, what percentage of the world's population, let's look at religious people, the world's most popular religion is Christianity. Is Christianity opposed to Yahweh's name or opposed?
On every level. 100%.
Islam.
Totally fully opposed.
All right. Hinduism.
Mm-hmm.
Totally opposed.
Have you ever heard anybody that's a socialist, secular, humanist say we ought to celebrate the name Yahweh? No. Or do they condemn Yahweh as the mean and wrathful God of the mythical Old Testament?
Yeah, that's what they do, except they don't use his name. They won't even use his name. They
and about the tiny religion of Judaism, which means a lot to Yahweh because he hates it, but he loves the people. They won't even say his name, will they?
No.
So the world is 99.9999% anti-Yahweh. You know, it was, Larry, I think you probably got as many scars on this as I have. The number of people when Yada Yah was first written and published that were Christians in particular says, you know, big effing deal that, you know, you think you know God's name, and that you've got this name that you cling to, and that that's the only thing that's important, and that the rest of us are wrong because we recognize that his name is unpronounceable.
Right.
How many people condemned us
many
upon that?
It's such a, it's tripe, but yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Tons of them.
But when you really get down to it, well, every word that Yahweh utters is unbelievably important for us, and enlightening and enriching and trustworthy and reliable and beneficial. There isn't anything in any one of the words that he shares with us that even holds a handle to his name. If you don't know his name, you don't know him.
It means so little to him that he says that for those who remove his name from his words, those people will not fail to be punished. They're going to be incarcerated for Taphis, right?
Right.
Yeah, for stealing in a clandestine way.
You know, Yahweh says there's several things that Yahweh says that grieve him enormously. One of the things that he says is that one of the greatest crimes that's ever been promoted by my people is that they're uncircumcised individuals in heaven. He said that's one of the greatest crimes ever been perpetrated by my people, and that, of course, was Pauline Christianity. Jews, as you know, Paul, promoting that myth. But he says the single greatest crime ever perpetrated by humankind was the removal of his name, Yahweh, and the replacement of it with the Lord. It's the single greatest.
Well, he even says to join the family, there's the love of his name. I get that. It's not just what his name means, but it's a shield. It's a shield because you find it everywhere. It's Yahusha, it's Yahweh, it's Masiyah, it's Mount Moriah. Moriah, I guess, is how it was said.
And, you know, there's a movie coming out that I saw the trailer of the other day, and it made me want to just scream. And it was a Transformer movie, and it says, you know, I've been called many names, and it has Jesus and Allah and Yahweh and Shiva, and it goes on with the names. And there's a reason that God says I only have one name. There's a reason he tells us my name is Yahweh. And that is because a God by any other name is a false God. Jesus.
And by the way, this is Allah. Important, too, for people that are fairly new to this. This is an important thing because I've seen this many times. They'll refuse to write out Yahweh and they'll put Yahweh. And they do that because the rabbis have scared them into believing if you mispronounce the name, you're dead.
Right.
Does Yahweh ever say, if you mispronounce my name, you're dead?
Nope.
No.
Nope.
Who said that?
It says, having my name be for naught.
Right. Who said that if you mispronounce the name, you're dead? That was the rabbis who were trying to hide his name.
Correct.
The Talmud did that.
Correct.
Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely. You're right.
It's important for them to
know. Yahweh wants us to know, and that's why the first statement he etched in stone is, you know, I am Yahweh, your God. I am the one who freed you from the servitude of slavery in Mitzrayim. You will not exist with any other God in my presence. What he's declaring here is that the reason I have a name, there's a reason I've given you my name, is that if you come to know me by name and associate the testimony that I have provided under my name, you'll come to know who I am, and you'll come to know the one and only God. And
you
realize
you
that
something
all testimony of a God by any other name is false.
If you go to a book or a website, and the cover of that book or the cover of that website is HaMashiach Yeshua, what are you going to do? Are you going
to read
time?
It.
I'm not either.
Nope. I'm not going to even read it.
Yeah, right.
You know, there's a website
that
I think has some good material on it. It's called Jesus Words Only. I'm not going to read it. I'm not going to waste my time. If you don't know the basics, if you don't know who Yahweh is, then you don't know enough to be sharing anything that's valuable to me.
Yeah, they've hid the word Yah in HaMashiach Yeshua. I mean, they've hidden it twice.
You know, I would like you to tell me how many times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms is will you find HaMashiach?
Never once. Never once.
Zero. That would be correct. Zero. So why would you be celebrating the HaMashiach when it's never written out once? It is never used as a... Mashiach is never used as a title. It's used as an adjective. And it's used
That's
as an adjective without the definitive, without the article.
Without the ha.
A in Hebrew. And it's used to modify messenger. And it is a worthy and dependable messenger who is prepared and set apart to serve by conveying the message. That's what it means. Set apart, prepared, and equipped to serve as an effective messenger. And it's never used as a title. Ever. And so this messianic movement, they're lost. There's no basis for it. You know, and there's a reason that there is no valid place that you can find Yahusha presented as the Mashiach or as the Messiah. I mean, that's clearly his name. And it's embedded throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms as the name. But all Yahweh wants you to know is that it's Yahweh who is engaged in the work of saving us. And even that name, Yahusha, isn't Yahweh's most important mission. The most important mission isn't to save us. It's to befriend us. To introduce himself to us, to offer us an opportunity to engage and participate in his family. That's why.
And most of your messianic websites, what do they focus on? What do they focus on?
Pauline Christianity and rabbinic Judaism.
New Testaments mostly, and then Judaism sprinkled in.
Uh-huh.
It's about treating your fellow man correctly and stuff like this. I mean,
God is Yahweh. That is one and only name. And if you're looking at any other name or title, you're looking the wrong direction. Anyway, it says that Noah had three sons named Shem, which is the first one is the name. Ham, which means to be sweltering hot, and Yepheth, which means to shine and appear beautiful. Those are the three names. Now, it's interesting that you can track each of the three and see through the table of nations and what they came to represent and who came from the various individuals. But the bottom line here is that the first name on the list is the most important because it emphasizes that the first name that Noah gave to his children was the Hebrew word for name because he knew that the name Yahweh is what is important. The region in God's presence was corrupt. The land was filled with violence, destruction, and plunder with Hamas. And so, you know what? Yes, he told us that he grieved in creating man because man became a killing machine. That man killed for fun, man killed for sport, man killed for power, man killed for all manner of reasons. But the fact is that he tells us more than just man was deadly. That we were corrupt, ravaged and ruined, devastated, destroyed, putrid and polluted slime. Shahat, and that we were overflowing with malai, satisfied with violence, destruction, and plunder, Hamas. You know, as I think of the America that I witnessed in the Rose Parade, that I witnessed in politics, that I witnessed in religion and culture, we have become satisfied with violence and destruction and plunder. We've become overflowing with it. We celebrate it.
Well, every movie seems to be about it.
Right. Our patriotism celebrates it. Our military celebrates it. Our hero worship and the police and all of that sort of stuff. Our past history of America having fought 400 or 101 wars in 400 years, one every 4 years. God, we're overflowing with violence and destruction.
No, another important point to make here. Isn't there a group called Hamas?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, they're in Gaza. Now, you know, it's I just think it's inevitable. But the Muslims in the West Bank are now acting, trying to prove that they can be as murderous as Hamas in Gaza. And routinely now they're driving their cars or driving their knives or shooting bullets into Jews. They did so yesterday. They did so the day before. They're doing so with reckless abandon, sacrificing their lives to go kill Jews. The most recent is the guy with the going to the grocery store, sets down his groceries, picks up his automatic rifle, and begins to shoot at unarmed, innocent people. It's the cowardliness of the whole thing is just despicable. But the commentators, as I was sawing the videos of it today, they speak of it as an outgrowth of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. You know, I didn't see a conflict there. The person drove the car into the park bench filled with little girls and women. I didn't see the conflict when that guy pulled out his gun and started shooting people sitting down at cafes. What part of an Israeli-Palestinian conflict do you see there?
You don't. I mean, this is just more propaganda. I guess they tell you something like this, and you're supposed to drop your thought process and just buy into it. And I think that that's what happens with a lot of people.
Because they hate the name. One of the reasons that they're anti-Semitic, they hate everything associated with Yisrael, with Yahudim, with Yahweh. They just are disgusted by it. They kill one, and that's good as far as they're concerned. They deserve to die. It was pretty pathetic. But, Hamas is corrupt. You know, in last week's program, we spent almost the entire program talking about what the eventuality is and how the world is going to coalesce around the Muslims that want to destroy Israel and how Yahweh has told us exactly how the next war is going to be fought and how it's going to lead in terms of the divestiture of Judea and Samaria from Israel. But I am convinced that that the world is going to side militarily, politically, economically, with the putrid slime that is so overflowing with corruption and with violence that they've named their favorite organization, Hamas, after this Hebrew word.
Isn't that astounding? It's astounding.
It's
like the rabbis naming their system to hide Yahweh's name, Shav.
Yeah. Shoah is now the
Shoah.
It was Shoah, but they corrupted it to Shoah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
When you first told me that, I was astounded. I went and looked it up. Yeah, it's sure called the Shoah system.
Yeah.
And you go,
when I first stumbled on it, I said, no, it can't be. I said, it can't be. There's no way they actually did this. And I was trying to figure out, why is it that people are so
stunning,
easily misled that there's no way to pronounce Yahweh's name when it's so obvious? So I decided, well, I'm going to study the system that told us that it was unpronounceable, and then you see Shav, and you look at, oh, my God, that is the verb that is the operative word that defines the third statement relative to Yahweh's name.
Hey, well, it's like the school you go to learn Hebrew called Yeshiva. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
So you think about it, that kind of falls in with Satan's pattern. He always, you know, puts it out there with the truth in some way.
Like speaking of Satan, you know, what is the theme of Islam? Allahu Akbar. Allah is greater. Greater than whom? Well, when did he first use it? Speaking to Jews.
Yep.
It means Allah is greater than the God of the Jews, greater than Yahweh. And what did Allah say was good? Halal. And what does Yahweh say is Satan's name?
Halal.
And of course, Christianity is based upon this notion that God died for your sins. Folks, how can you be that stupid? What you can see is the adversary has said to Yahweh, yeah, you love this creation, but they are so stupid. I can tell them the dumbest, most idiotic, irrational things, and they'll believe me over you. That's how stupid they are.
And what was his other name? Lord, right?
Right.
That was his other name. I mean, you had Lord Baal, and you had Sin, the national lunar deity, you know, which was a crescent moon, both in Babylon. And just as it was in the beginning, it'll be in the end. Those two are going to merge because they were both part of the same system.
Or how could you be so terribly misled that when Ron Wyatt, on his deathbed, tells you that the two tablets that Yahweh etched in stone are going to be revealed to the world when the Sunday law is established, and you can't figure out that it's Christianity that's going to be imposed by Satan? I mean, the guy that's interviewing him just went right over. In fact, he passed over it so nonchalantly, Ron said, I need to reemphasize this a second time because I was misleading in my original testimony. He didn't say the abomination of desecration is when this is going to happen. He didn't say the mark of the beast is when this is going to happen. And that's what I've said previously. He said when the Sunday law is established, when Christianity is mandated.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's pretty clear. In the piece, discussing the beast, and how he grows out of a horn, it's lowly and little, and then what is Paulos? It means lowly and little. And that's exactly how King Sheol saw himself, as lowly and little. Right. So we see these archetypes coming up to be the beast, and Raquel, when she, she said there was a beast inside of her. And it's following right through, Benjamin, and he's going to be a Pauline Christian. There's very little question about that because I don't believe Yahweh would have mentioned it like that. He doesn't make mistakes like that.
Yeah, Lisa wrote this to me. It says, the young man he shot in the grocery store was just mentioning the most recent act by someone who decided that they would be a coward and gun down unarmed people. His text to the young man he shot in the grocery store, his text his mother had read, I'm having fun. I love life. In Islam, there is no love. There is no life. There's fear, and there is death. But, that's the nature of religion. They're all like it, why God hated them. They are.
Yeah, that would be with Toabah.
Destruction and thunder.
Isn't that the motto of the Palestinians? We love life as much, or we love death as much as the Jews love life?
That is correct.
I have heard
they said they will prevail because they love death as much as those that they seek to kill love life.
I mean, that's what Yahweh calls religion, Toabah, right? Toabah.
Yeah.
Nothing good in it. That's what he hit me. Tob is good.
Tob is good. Tobah is nothing good.
Yeah.
Hamas doesn't just mean violence and destruction and plunder, but torrentlessness, cruelty, thievery, injustice, lack of moral restraint. Welcome to the world of religion.
Well, imagine naming yourself that.
Yeah.
There's a fighter. There's a fighter in MMA, and his name is Cain Velasquez. Now, can you imagine as a parent naming your child Cain?
Yeah.
What are you doing? What are you thinking? And then when you look at how Yahweh looked at Sheol, okay, King Sheol, what was his parents thinking naming him Sheol?
Right. All the souls in the world today. What in the world are people thinking? Or the name Benjamin. I mean, how many Benjamins are there today?
A lot.
And look what Yahweh has to say about Benjamin.
Nothing good.
Well, fellows, we're at the end of our recording period, so I want to thank you. We'll stay tuned to what Scott has to say about the recording session with Roy. The more that join Roy, the merrier, in the sense that he has a lot to say, and we learn a lot from him. Mm-hmm. And to the degree that he wants an audience and a narrator through the process, then we can all join Scott on Sunday for the Roy discussion. That's going to be a two-hour program. And I told Scott that I thought that, 2 hours a week is probably, one day, 2 hours a week is really the pace I thought we should maintain here for a while. And that we'll do the study that you're on the following Sunday.
Yeah.
And we're not doing this because it's a Sunday. It's a day that Scott has some free time, and that's just why the previous one was on a Friday. This the next one is on just the time that Scott's got free when the studio is free to use the equipment. Yep.
So we work anyway.
Yep. Now, as you can see here on the Noah story, there's so much more to this story, and we're making very little progress through it in the sense of, three statements today in an hour and a half time. But I just think that's the right way to go. I just think we just continue with this story. It was a lot to learn.
Sure.
I learned a couple of things there. I'd blown right by that, the way he was in his home.
Yeah, in his home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that's the only thing that really matters is how we are in his home. And it really matters that that Noah was upright. It matters what his name represents. And it matters what man was doing in terms of wanton killing. And just the essence of the story of Noah. The story of Noah has a light and dark side, and the light side is really straightforward. He was... He provides guidance into how to know Yahweh, how to engage in a relationship with Him, how to listen to what God has to say, how not to question it, not in the sense of don't say, I think it needs to be interpreted and modified and changed for the age. And no, it's just listen to what Yahweh has to say, accept it, and act upon it.
It's a hard thing when somebody says, hey Larry, how does Yahweh? you don't want to sit there and go, hey, I'm Mr. Perfect. I'm a long way from it. But yeah, sure, he's letting me off the hook for all my imperfections. I mean, he better for anybody that's going to walk in the home. I mean, you're taught exactly the opposite in Christianity, as I'm sure you've seen it. We're not perfect, we're just forgiven.
Yeah.
Whoa. Hey, buddy. No, you actually have to be viewed as perfect.
Right.
I mean, that's a profound difference right there.
And because we're not perfect, we're not welcome into Yahweh's home. That's the whole purpose of matzah, is to make us perfect. In Yahweh's home, He perfects us prior to adopting us. Then He adopts us.
Other than that,
move right on.
You're being self-reliant, aren't you? Right. I mean, I'm reliant on the work He did. That's all I can do.
Correct.
So,
and that's a marvelous plan that He has put forth, and that salvation is only a byproduct of it, and the most important aspect of it is the relationship and the growth that comes along with it, the empowerment, the enrichment.
Don't rush through this because this is so pertinent to the age we happen to live in, and there's such a short period of time left now that we're at 2016.
I didn't really notice that until you just mentioned it. But, we keep on saying, what's worse, the time of Noah or us today. But the fact is that we need the same arc. Mm-hmm. The arc is the only way out of this age today, just as it was then.
Right.
And there's just one arc.
Yeah, there's only one.
There's only one.
And we're in year 5982.
I read that, but yes, you're right. We are.
Yeah.
Well, there's not a lot of time left.
Come around April, we'll be in
5983. Let's get everything we can out of this field.
Yeah, I'm happy to go, but I'm looking forward to doing whatever we can do over the next, 11 years?
10 or 11 years.
Yeah.
It sounds like we're brought right up to the edge of the great calamity, as he calls it.
Yeah,
you know, I right up to the edge of it. And that's of course, the world isn't going to realize what happens, so few are taken. You know,
well, I would assume that Truro 2026 would be the date, don't you think?
I think so. Yeah. I think it's highly, highly likely that that's the
If I had to guess, that's what I would think, but I don't know. So,
yeah,
you know,
I don't know.
You know, you even brought up the fact we could be brought, you know, a year into the tribulation or the Great Calamity or 2 years or even up to 3 years. So, I mean, that could happen.
I think it's possible. I think it is possible.
I don't find that likely, knowing something of Yahweh's nature, because he doesn't.
Let me throw one thing in it that might change that perspective ever so slightly, and that is that the first 3 years of the tribulation are not going to be hugely different than what we're going to experience in the ramp up to it, and so. There is the possibility that we could exist on the planet prior to the time that Christianity is established, that the one world government is established, that the second phase of the Magog War hits, that we're gone before the midpoint. It would still be Yahweh taking his children out of harm's way and allowing us the opportunity to reach as many people as possible in the interim. I think we ought to be open to the fact that there is that possibility.
Yeah. But Apophis hitting the Atlantic in 2029, that's in April.
Yes, it is.
That's midway
through. It'll wipe out the east coast and all of Europe. Of all the
That's midway through.
Western Europe, right, and eastern United States. So it'd be very hard. It's hard for me to wrap my head around beyond 2027, 2028 tops.
Right. Well, I'm in agreement with you. Yeah.
Yeah. So we still have this.
The fall of 2028, that Teruah, is a possibility.
Oh, drop dead date.
That's 2 years past. Yeah.
But he also says we act as a restrainer. And that restrainer has to be removed, really, for the beast to assume power. So, I think it puts us back to 2026 or thereabouts.
I think that the beast, while the beast is engaged and has some effect, significant effect in negotiating treaties and positioning power, and that's. The beast, the Torahless one, really isn't in charge of the world until the midpoint of the tribulation.
Right. Yeah. And that's when it shows who he really is.
Right. Yeah. That is correct. So, I'm open to the possibility that we could be here through the Teruah of up to the point of Teruah in 2028. So, I think there's a possibility of another 2 years.
Hope you're wrong.
I hope. I'm not saying I'm right here. I'm just saying that, possibility is. And part of it that causes me to think of that is that so much emphasis is on the tribulation being 2 3-and-a-halves as opposed to just 1 7. That there's a fulcrum.
But you have a nuclear war before.
Right. There's a fulcrum in the tribulation. You know, there's a definite fulcrum there. And that Yashaya 17 and 18 seem to suggest that Israel is narrow at the waist and then we're harvested.
That's right. That's exactly. It doesn't seem. It certainly follows in that order.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just think it's a possibility. I'm And, you know, when it talks about the time of great tribulation, too, even in the Greek translations and Revelation, mm-hmm. And keeping us out of that, you know, it could be addressing the last 3.5 years.
Yeah.
So it's something to think about. It's a possibility. And, you know, if we're here, we're protected.
If we're here, we're playing.
That's right. That's right.
But correct me if I'm wrong. In that first 3.5 years, you have the nuclear exchange.
I think it's the nuclear exchange is right at the. My sense is the nuclear exchange, Apophis, the landslide of the volcanic island, all of that kind of stuff. I have a sense is
right at
gonna
the
happen. Yeah, I think it's all going to happen right at the same time. I don't think. See, I think that the Magog invasion of Israel by the tens, if not hundreds of millions, occurs in the early in 2027, and mm-hmm. so that's going to take a while. So, I mean, I can easily see it going through 2028, and it's I think it's in 2029 that it turns nuclear. The second phase occurs when the rest of the nations respond to it.
Well, that would make sense. That would make sense because you know when you have these major catastrophes like you know the mountain of fire falling in and the Apophis hitting and a nuclear war, that totally sets up the beast to come in total power because out of chaos comes control and there it is.
Right.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yep, and that is exactly how mankind gains power. Find the justification for taking people's power. 9/11, Patriot Act.
Sure.
Great example. You know, look what happens. Look at the consequence. You know, the government makes a tremendous error in its control over lending institutions regarding home loans. There is an economic collapse. So what does the government do? Puts more controls over lending.